Part 1. Friends of Childhood. Chapter 1. Dr. Howard Archie had just come up from a game of pool with the Jewish clothier and two traveling men who happened to be staying overnight in Moonstone. His offices were in the Duke block, over the drugstore. Larry, the doctor's man, had lit the overhead light in the waiting room and the double student's lamp on the desk in the study. The isinglass sides of the hard coal burner were aglow, and the air in the study was so hot that as he came in, the doctor opened the door into his little operating room, where there was no stove. The waiting room was carpeted and stiffly furnished, something like a country parlor. The study had worn, unpainted floors, but there was a look of winter comfort about it. The doctor's flat-top desk was large and well-made. The papers were in orderly piles, under glass weights. Behind the stove, a wide bookcase, with double glass doors, reached from the floor to the ceiling. It was filled with medical books of every thickness and color. On the top shelf stood a long row of 30 or 40 volumes, bound all alike in dark mottled board covers with imitation leather backs. As the doctor in New England villages is proverbially old, so the doctor in small Colorado towns 25 years ago was generally young. Dr. Archie was barely 30. He was tall, with massive shoulders which he held stiffly, and a large, well-shaped head. He was a distinguished-looking man, for that part of the world at least. There was something individual in the way in which his reddish-brown hair, parted cleanly at the side, bushed over his high forehead. His nose was straight and thick, and his eyes were intelligent. He wore a curly reddish moustache and an imperial, cut trimly, which made him look a little like the pictures of Napoleon III. His hands were large and well-kept, but ruggedly formed, and the backs were shaded with crinkly reddish hair. He wore a blue suit of woolly, wide-wailed serge. The traveling men had known at a glance that it was made by a Denver tailor. The doctor was always well-dressed. Dr. Archie turned up the student's lamp and sat down in the swivel chair before his desk. He sat uneasily, beating a tattoo on his knees with his fingers, and looked about him as if he were bored. He glanced at his watch, then absently took from his pocket a bunch of small keys, selected one and looked at it. A contemptuous smile, barely perceptible, played on his lips, but his eyes remained meditative. Behind the door that led into the hall, under his buffalo skin driving coat, was a locked cupboard. This the doctor opened mechanically, kicking aside a pile of muddy overshoes. Inside, upon the shelves, were whiskey glasses and decanters, lemons, sugar, and bitters. Hearing a step in the empty, echoing hall without, the doctor closed the cupboard again, snapping the Yale lock. The door of the waiting room opened, a man entered, and came on into the consulting room. "Good evening, Mr. Kronborg," said the doctor, carelessly. "Sit down." His visitor was a tall, loosely built man, with a thin brown beard streaked with grey. He wore a frock coat, a broad-brimmed black hat, a white lawn necktie, and steel-rimmed spectacles. Altogether, there was a pretentious and important air about him, as he lifted the skirts of his coat and sat down. "Good evening, Doctor. Can you step around to the house with me? I think Mrs. Kronborg will need you this evening." This was said with profound gravity, and curiously enough, with a slight embarrassment. "Any hurry?" the doctor asked over his shoulder as he went into his operating room. Mr. Kronborg coughed behind his hand and contracted his brows. His face threatened at every moment to break into a smile of foolish excitement. He controlled it only by calling upon his habitual pulpit manner. "Well, I think it would be as well to go immediately. Mrs. Kronborg will be more comfortable if you are there. She has been suffering for some time." The doctor came back and threw a black bag upon his